Hi, I'm Paul Marinelli and welcome to my Talktomotive podcast. Today we welcome Jeff Smith, highly successful automotive workshop owner, auto electrician, and in more recent years, the past 16 in fact, the technical editor of The Automotive Technician, or TAT magazine, an auto aftermarket trade publication which has become one of Australia's most trusted technical resources. TAT has managed to transcend advertorial jargon and provides real solutions to problems that real mechanics face in real workshops every single day. For many in the industry, it has become a godsend. Gee, that 16 years whizzed by quickly, didn't it, Jeff? Welcome.
Yeah, it certainly has. It's hard to believe that, you know, 15, 16 years has passed since the idea on a paper napkin at an airport developed into what it is today. And I've got to pinch myself every now and again to think where it's got to. It was certainly a dream of mine, and it's overtaken my expectations of it, and there's still a lot more to come.
And it was devised really purely to assist other people in the industry more than anything else.
Yeah, 100%. It was about helping each other, basically, I suppose. My background originally was auto electrician, is what I started the industry in initially as an auto electrician, and then went into mechanical and owning complete workshops. But, you know, the days of knowing everything and protecting that bit of knowledge was, I could see, coming at us at a fast rate of knots, and we had to lean off each other. Like a lot of other industries have platforms where you can learn from each other, be it legal, medical, whatever it might be, so people don't, in theory, make the same mistake twice. We didn't have that. So that's what TAT was all about. It was about building a network of people sharing information, knowledge, and, as I always say, experience is probably the number one asset of the aftermarket industry, is our experience. Collectively, we learn to harness that and share it amongst everybody else. And also for the future technicians, 10 years, 15 years, how do you fix an older car? You know, that experience of people that know how to do that will be gone from the workshop floor, but the younger generation may still need to be able to do that. So we need to be able to leave that legacy behind, that of case studies and tutorials and webinars and all this sort of stuff together to allow them to be able to continue repairing the older cars, which probably you and I still love to get out and about in.
Further to that quest to assist, something you have once again taken the lead in for the establishment of the certified EV and hybrid service network that you have created and launched at AutoCare in Brisbane earlier this year.
Yeah, I suppose it was just a natural extension of what we were doing already. And again, my background was auto electrical. So I think it's interesting and very rewarding from my point of view that, you know, I started the industry in auto electrical in a big Bosch shop, and that's what I did. Went to BMW, opened my own shop. And now I'm gravitating back to that auto electrical roots that I started with, that the tail end of my career. I'm mainly focusing on electrical, electronic parts, EVs and hybrids. So I think that's, to me, ironic but very rewarding. But yeah, that was a natural progression after many discussions with people that we're going to be in the same boat in 5 years, 10 years as far as EV and hybrids are concerned. So can we start a bit earlier this time in collecting that data, that information from these vehicles, the case studies, the repair solutions, that sort of stuff, right from the word go. So the aim is now that in 5 years, we'll look back and think, okay, that was the best decision we made 5 years ago to get into this space early, establish the network, establish the technical assistance, establish the marketing, so consumers can find a credited, trained workshop that is networked with others to be able to solve their EV or hybrid problem in the future.
The support's really important, isn't it? Because many repairers are having to really totally modernise their equipment, their technology, retrain themselves as well as their staff. So having access to a group of like-minded professionals can really only help them with these major changes.
Oh, 100%. I think most of the responses we're getting back from, you know, workshops that are joining the EV and hybrid network is purely the support, because they've done the technical training, they've got the qualification, but they haven't got the practical experience, and you can't get that in TAFE or anywhere else. You need to gain that as cars come into your workshop, but that's very difficult with this high technology that's coming in. If a used Tesla comes in, or a hybrid, even an old Camry or a Prius with a high voltage electrical fault code in there, and a car's shut down, they've never struck that before. So where do I start? What do I do? What are the pitfalls? What shouldn't do, or what shouldn't I do? That's the real practical information is what they're looking for, and you can't get that anywhere else. So that's what we're trying to establish. So we've got a network of EV and hybrid specialists now that are part of our technical team. And we're here to support those workshops, wherever they are in Australia and whatever the problem they have. They're not alone. They've got a whole group behind them that we're going to walk through step by step. And the upside is that whatever we do with that workshop and ultimately resolve the problem, we will then document that. That will then become a case study that the next person that has the same symptoms, the same vehicle, same fault codes, can follow the same process to ultimately work out what's wrong with that vehicle. So hopefully that'll help out, you know, just like all our repair solutions have done to date. in the EV and hybrid space, it's going to work equally as well.
And in a country like Australia, with our vast distances and the take-up of EVs being quite a bit lower than the rest of the world, or particularly Europe, to the best of your knowledge, has the idea of an independent EV service network concept been embraced overseas?
Yes and no. There is a group in the UK who we're talking with at the moment called HEVRA, which is the Hybrid and Electric Vehicle Repair Alliance. They've started, but they're very, very small. They're what I would equate to TAT 16 years ago. We've got the beauty of starting the EV and hybrid network on already a very solid base. You know, 4,000 plus members in Australia for TAT, very strong training and website respect within the industry, I suppose you could say, then to start the EV and hybrid saying. So we're saying to our members already, if you're interested in this space or you want to go down this area, come and join up with this other network. It is a totally different space for TAT to be in. We've never been a consumer type of thing. We've been business to business, a model, and now we're going to consumer driven. So we're now through the EV and hybrid network website, linking the consumer with a used or out of warranty EV or hybrid with a trained and certified workshop. So very different space, but again, fits very well. From my perspective, we are independent as well, so we're not backed by any, you know, national company that's pushing a particular barrow. We're very independent. We're very proud of that, and we'll stay that way. And so the consumer can believe that, you know, they're going to get a good workshop that has got the backup, the network behind them, to help them solve their problem.
And independence is very, very important, isn't it? Particularly with these technologies and certain companies developing certain EV technologies and keeping them away from others and so forth. Being independent just takes you out of all that IP, if you like, issues that happen between manufacturers.
Yeah, again, 100%. And again, you know, there's HEVRA in the UK, as I mentioned, but in America. So Brendan and I just returned back from just over a week's training over in Boston with the ACDC Training Center, which has been established for more than 20 years. Again, a workshop owner in Craig that got into that space and has been doing that training. So brought back an immense amount of information, but we're also working with him now together. So we've got this real connection around the globe on EV and hybrid. So as problems develop or issues arise or new repair techniques or new ways to repair a particular problem, rather than replacing a whole battery pack or a whole inverter converter, we might be able to repair one part of it. So the aftermarket I've always found has been very, very intuitive and very, very smart. You know, we've worked things out as time progresses. You know, even take old mechanical things. Oh, that was a poor design. We'll redesign that and make it like this. It's bigger and stronger. And the same electronic, the EFI and electronic ignition and all that sort of stuff. With the aftermarket has been very, very innovative in that space. And nothing's going to change. We're going to be the same in the EV and hybrid space. So as problems develop and we find ways around repairing them bigger, you know, better and cheaper, we'll do that. And that's what we've always done as an industry, and we'll continue to do that.
Let's talk about electric vehicle servicing. There's no doubt that your EV expertise is up there with the best. You've been doing this all over the world, which is very, very good as well. So who better than to help us dispel some EV myths out there from the independent repairer's perspective?
The reality is every EV, and if we take hybrids out because they've still got a nice engine, still they've got a full service schedule like anybody else, but EV alone, they all come out with a service schedule. Every one of them has a service schedule like any other car you purchase. They're sold on the premise, and again, I've heard so many EV salesmen, be it new or used EVs, nah, don't worry, nothing to do on them. You just drive them. It's totally incorrect. And like any car, if you do that to an ICE engine, it'll come back and bite you. The same with an electric vehicle. You need to maintain it. And again, with, as I said, all my customers, be it an ICE engine, an EV or a hybrid, maintain the car correctly, it will serve you well in general, barring the odd unforeseen problem. You service it and service it well, it will return to you back in spades. You don't, it'll come back and bite you. And that's the same with an EV. And unfortunately, most of the consumers, the early adopters that bought into EVs, they bought into that. Well, you just drive them. They don't need any servicing. I think the next group of consumers buying in are probably a little bit more skeptical. They're not that early adopter type mentality. They're probably a little bit thinking, okay, well, something needs to happen with these. And whether it's 12 months or 2 years, in saying that, EVs need a lot less servicing. There's no question that the amount of work required is vastly less than on an ICE engine, but they still need maintenance and repairs. And a good case study for that is a colleague of mine, as a friend in Melbourne, who has a Tesla he bought brand new. He's just had his first service done outside of warranty. And the service bill for that was like three or four times more than it was during the warranty period. So during the warranty period, they want to paint this picture, nothing needs to be done. We'll just do an update and away you go. But the reality is once it's out of warranty, suddenly it needs all this work doing to it. So the reality is it does need servicing. Every one of them does. We've done services on virtually, I think, every EV that's out in the market now. And they do vary, but I think a yearly check over, whether it's, you know, tyre pressures, wheel alignment, cabin filters, air filter, wiper blades, washers, you know, all the general stuff, you know, full scan of the things, checking all your lights. They are heavy on tyres, electric cars. So, you know, anyone with an EV knows that tyres wear out twice as fast, and hence they need, in some cases, special tyres, which are harder, and that's why they're noisier, which defeats the purpose of an electric car, but are coming to light that need to happen with electric vehicles like a car.
Yeah, so they do need maintenance, so it's a myth that they don't need any, and thanks for dispelling that for us so clearly. So another myth going around the industry is apparently everything can be diagnosed quickly with an EV because it's all electronic. It's just a really fast process, doesn't take very long. What do you say to that, Jeff?
I have to hold my breath there. It's certainly not true. Well, so far, history tells us the EV platform, the design of it, are very reliable. You know, the three-phase motors and inverter converters, they're extremely reliable. So they do give less trouble. The problem is when they do give trouble or a problem does develop, that's when the challenge starts. You need someone then trained and experienced in that area to correctly diagnose where the problem is. Now, whether it's in the battery pack, the pre-charge circuitry, in the cabling, in the inverter converter, in the motor, the cabling to the motor, you know, there's lots of areas, and whether it's an installation fault code that comes up, lots of different fault codes that can come up in an EV. The trick there is then working out where that problem is. Through my own experience, I get calls probably once a week from a workshop somewhere that's had one. They've replaced this, replaced that, still hasn't fixed the problem because they're just guessing. They don't know the true diagnostic process to work out, okay, what part of this car doesn't need to replace. And classic example, only last week was a Honda Civic. It's a hybrid, but a problem in the high voltage side of things, was told to replace one thing, replace it, didn't fix it, told to replace another thing, didn't fix it. We end up working out what the problem was. It was a fault in one of the motors, which was causing a problem in the inverter converter. And so it was a knock-on effect, but that's where the trick comes to it. They are very reliable, but when they do fail, and they will fail, there's no question of that, it's then being able to be competent and skilled enough to work out, well, what is the problem and how do we fix it?
And hence having the ability to rely on a network of other mechanics who've been through similar situations who can provide that sort of advice and support.
I only had one last week from another good friend of mine in Sydney who runs an EV and hybrid workshop, had a converter problem on a vehicle, sent it away, had it repaired, put it back in the car, 11 minutes into the road test, bang, the new inverter just physically blew up. And it was because the motor had a problem. So, again, it's a learning curve to think, okay, if you've got a problem in the inverter converter, it could be because there's a problem in the motor. So you need to have the motor or motors, if there's more than one, thoroughly checked properly to ensure that there's not a problem in the motor that's causing the inverter converter problem. So It was a very expensive mistake for him and obviously for his customer, you know, to go through a repair process to only find out they fixed the symptom but not the cause of the problems. Things that we're learning as we go, and I think even the dealerships, the stories I hear from dealerland where an EV comes in under warranty for an electric EV, they're just guessing. They're just replacing parts and hoping it fixes it. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't fix them. But, again, it's not just an aftermarket thing here. It's also an OE thing. They're learning as they go as well with this sort of stuff because the experience is not there in this space.
And it's all being rolled out so quickly with new EV models upon new EV models coming at us all the time from a whole range of different manufacturers. So you could just imagine some of the confusion out there.
100%. And again, I've got an English guy staying with us at the moment. He's got a full EV, Hyundai or Kia or whatever what it is over in the UK. His car just spent 3 months at the dealer because it wouldn't recharge. And the dealer, obviously, having it there for 3 months, they didn't know what they were doing. So it's not just the aftermarket here, but I think, no disrespect to the OE, but I think the aftermarket, we're certainly more adaptable and thinking on our feet on how to fix things as a general rule than the OE are. So, you know, sometimes we can nut these things out because that's what we do day in, day out, is nut these problems out. So at the end of the day, the whole industry is learning as we go into this space. It is accelerating, and I think what will accelerate the uptake more is supply. You know, what's hindered the uptake here in Australia particularly is the supply. So whilst we can't buy them, no one's going to buy them, or they're not going to wait. So if that supply chain issues can be resolved and OEs can supply countries like ours with more stock, I think that the uptake will increase.
And I think the independent aftermarket is in a far better position because, just as you mentioned, you're working on so many different models and you can take what you've learned even from a different model to another EV to see if that sorts a problem. Now, a dealer will be restricted to only that make that they deal in or those makes they deal in. So I think that's a huge advantage for the independent aftermarket too when it comes to EV and hybrids. Now, something about batteries here, there's all this talk about them being too expensive to replace, and some people have put some scary invoices online that have helped to spread the fear of thousands and thousands of dollars for replacement batteries. Is this always the case, Jeff?
No. I've actually stopped reading some media posts and things and listening to people because the amount of misinformation out there is just being spooked by different bodies with different agendas, I suppose you could say. It's not the case. I mean, the reality is if you buy a new EV now, the battery warranty is just unbelievable and they're backing the product. So the new batteries that are coming out in the EVs you buy today are vastly different to what they were 10, 12 years ago when the first Teslas came out or the first EVs were coming out. I mean, the battery development has been phenomenal in safety and performance and life expectancy, etc., is vastly different. So a lot of the myths that are out there at the moment are based on yesterday's technology batteries, not today's technology batteries. And even with the old cars, I mean, you can buy upgraded battery packs for a lot of the older cars now, which contain the new battery technology for the car, which gives that car a new lease of life. And if you look at the environmental point of view, if you can keep that car going by giving it a new battery pack, a new heart, so to speak, that environmentally is friendly because you're keeping that car going. It's going to be right for another 10 years worth of life instead of scrapping it, sort of thing. So there's lots of different ways you can look at it, but the technology in batteries has been phenomenal. From what I've been reading and from what I've been learning, that the advancement in the next 5 years is going to be exponential again. And the technology that's out there being tested right now is phenomenal. So if that comes to fruition or even halfway to that, you know, that whole landscape and that range anxiety scenario is going to be totally blown away.
And range anxiety is an interesting point because a lot of people listening to this Talk to Motive podcast are in Europe. Their distances are vastly different that they travel compared to us here in Australia or in the United States or in Africa and countries like that. Their distances are far greater. And to that end, what you're saying is very refreshing to know because range is the issue and obviously the recharging network capability too of the larger countries. Do you see that improving a lot soon or quickly?
Oh, 100%. And I think there's always the argument that the country town, the guy that's 100 k's from anywhere and he needs cars that can drive that distance, etc. But when you take 80% of the population, 85% of the population in mainstream cities, large population, do average of 10, 20 k per trip twice a day, for instance, you know, the EV is perfectly suited to those people. So for the vast majority of the population, you know, an EV would be perfectly suited, especially a two-car family where one car might be the one used for the camping trip once a year. That's fine. Leave that there. Get the EV for the second one. And the whole concept, and I learned a lot when I went to a conference only probably 12 months ago here in Australia, and they had a couple of speakers there about the charging myths and charging infrastructure and stuff. And the amount of myths involved in that side of it is just phenomenal. In regards to, you know, oh, I'm going to melt down my switchboards and my building's not going to cope with it. It's all fallacy, all, you know, not true. Most cars will be charged at night when you're sleeping in off-peak rates when electricity use is way down. For those 6 to 8 hours from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., we've got an abundance of power to be used at very low cost. You can recharge your EV during that time. You don't ever have to use a fast charger. So there's still a lot of misconceptions and a lot of things to be learnt. But from what I've researched and my own experiences, once someone gets into an EV or a family has an EV, all those myths and those concerns get blown out the window and there's a fight to the electric car every day. They want to drive that one, not the other one. And again, if you take the BMW i3 when it first came out, it first came out with a range extender. So you buy the i3 and you can buy a range extender with it. And when they first brought it out, I think 95% of them were sold with range extenders because of the range anxiety. I need that range extender. I need to be able to go that bit further if I need to. Fast forward 8 years, I think it was, only 10% of them now get sold with range extenders because out of that first lot that got sold, no one ever used range extender. So when they went to replace it, they thought, well, I never used it in the 5 years I had the last one. Why would I buy one with another one? So that anxiety or that fear is taken away once you've actually got one. I mean, I've got one, my Nissan Leaf, and I only charge it on an 8-amp charger in my normal power point in my garage or at work, and I've never had to use anything else. Yes, I don't take it on the 400-kilometre trip to Timbuktu. I did take it to a wedding, which was 240K away, charged it at the Airbnb house that I had just on a power point, and we used it for the whole weekend and back again. So we still managed that trip with my EV, but for the average person, for the average weekend, for the everything else. And as I said to people, if you go away once a year, just hire the car that you need for that one weekend and get you into that EV. You know, that to have a car because you're going to use it for 2% of the time for its purpose for the other 98 doesn't make sense.
Well, Jeff, thank you. I could talk for ages about all this, but I think you've done a great job in dispelling a lot of the myths about EVs. But even more importantly, your work on The Automotive Technician on Tap Magazine, truly appreciated by all in the industry in this part of the world. Keep that going, keep that up. But also with your EV and hybrid service network, if people want to find out more, where should they go?
They can just go to the evandhybridnetwork.com.au website, or if they go to the TAP website, you'll get links to it as well. Both those websites are live now. If you even go to the EV Hybrid Network website, you'll see the members we've got there. There was a big map there with all the flags of people that have joined up so far. So it's been a great uptake so far. We're growing that, and I think over the next 6 to 12 months, that will accelerate as we get out into the market more and more. But again, we're here to help. We're here to help each other as technicians in the industry, but also to allow consumers to find the right person, because there are a lot of consumers out there that want to go into this EV and hybrid space. Quite a lot of people are that environmentally friendly and are looking for that option. Okay, but where can I get it serviced? If I buy a secondhand one, where can I go? So we're trying to just reinforce to the consumers out there that if you're thinking about going into that EV or hybrid space, that there is a network of aftermarket people there to help you. And I think that's important nationally anyway, that we reinforce that there is an aftermarket group there to help those people transition to EV or hybrid when they're ready.
And of course, we're speaking about Australia here, but I hope the people listening all over the world do take note of the opportunity available to network amongst your colleagues and to create an EV hybrid network, just like what's been done by Jeff and his team here in Australia. Thanks for your time, Jeff Smith.
No worries, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. I'm Paul Marinelli, coming to you from Melbourne, Australia. You can find me via my Facebook or LinkedIn channels or via my website, marinellipr.com.au.